Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing. Share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone. Call in with your comments, 347-539-5639, and be a part of the solution.
Good morning, and thank you for listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif, and greetings to all my family listening around the world, because we are all one human family, and I love you all, those I know and those I have not yet met. So, to my family in China, Sao An. In India, Subrabhat. In Japan, Ohayo gozaimasu. In Korea, Jo-en-a-chim. In Russia, Dobre utra. In Germany, Guten Tag. In France, and all the French-speaking people around the world, Bonjour. In Spain, and all the Spanish-speaking people around the world, Buenos dias. In Egypt, Sabah el Khair. In Ghana, Maache. In Nigeria, Ekaro. In South Africa, Sanibonani. In Senegal, Jam Ingafanane. In Kenya, and all the Swahili-speaking people around the world, Habari za Sabui. In Israel, Boker Tov. In Saudi Arabia, and all the Arabic-speaking people listening around the world, Assalamu alaikum. Good morning, and may peace be upon you all.
And welcome to another Monday morning, another great week in which we get a chance to solve the world's problems in about 2 hours each day. And we want to hear from you. If you're listening online, give us a call, 347-539-5639. Press 1 when you're ready to join our conversation. This week, we're going to go around the world and take a look at how we're affecting each other's lives. We are now a global village because of the modern means of communication, and we have an opportunity to get to know our neighbors. But, of course, there are some people who are the type of people you don't want as neighbors. You know who they are. Loud, ignorant, destructive, disrespectful, out of control. But when we think of traveling around the world and experiencing the culture of people, there are some places we would love to go where it looks pleasant, the people seem nice and friendly, and it's enjoyable, entertaining place to be, and we think we'd feel safe. But then there are other places where we like to stay away from because of what we've seen about the culture. Well, culture is crucial to economy, and many places that are tourist attractions enjoy a bustling economy because people enjoy the culture of the place. So today we're going to take a look at the global image of African American culture. What does the rest of the world see when they consider traveling to the inner cities of America? The world loves our music and dancing. They even like our style. But what about this image of excessive crime? Well, this week we'll talk to journalists and image makers who are examining the global impressions of African American culture and how it affects the economy in the inner cities. People come and travel and spend money at places where they enjoy the people. There are some pluses to the image that we have. For some people, it's a curiosity. But for others, they're fearful. And some, they like to imitate certain aspects of what we present. And yet, sometimes what we present is destructive to ourselves. So we're going to take a look at that. Well, we had an opportunity, of course, to mingle with members of the Chicago Association of African American Photographers yesterday, and this is an organization that has as its mission to capture the image of African Americans and preserve it for history. And as we capture those images, we look at how a visual image speaks so much of what that person represents. What is our global image based on the impressions people have seen in the mass media, which now includes all the internet and everything from the social media and all of the sites that people post photos and videos? What do people see when they look at us? And what about us do they like? And what about us do they fear? Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk to a photographer who is working on a special project that captures a specific cultural aspect of African-American women. When we come back, we'll talk to Delicia Kinney. And we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 347-539-5639. Press 1 when you're ready to join in. You're listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif, and our question today is, what is the global image of African-American culture? We'll be right back after this quick break, so stay with us.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, hosts John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
We're back. You're listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif, and I'd like to welcome to our show this morning a fantastic photographer that you need to know, Delicia Di Kinney. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Good morning. How are you?
Oh, it's a great Monday morning, and I'm so excited. You know, this past week I've been involved in a lot of different activities around the city, around the state, and I've seen a lot of things that have made me, in some places, feel a lot of hope and a lot of joy, and other places, a lot of concern. And at yesterday's meeting of the Chicago Association of African American Photographers, as they talked about the business of capturing the images, I thought about what the world is seeing of us now. And I've gotten so much feedback from various travelers. You know, Chicago is an international city, and you always run into tourists. I've gotten so many feedback from people who, you know, Asians, Europeans, that have asked me, you know, what is going on with one of the things they asked me about, the image of African-American women. And we've got some issues because, you know, we have historically been challenged with our own self-image of beauty. And other people see it, but we don't. And someone asked me, a matter of fact, it was a gentleman from Senegal who happened to be African, but he said, what is it with black women born here? Why are they so negative? And I thought, wow, that's what they think of us. So I was really fascinated when you said you're putting together a book that's displaying African-American natural beauty, because we spend millions upon millions of dollars in the cosmetic industry because we think we have to fix things about us, and we don't seem to have a good self-image. What motivated you to work on this visual project that portrays us in our natural beauty?
Well, that's a good question. I'm glad you asked me that, Latif. First, I'd like to just say that hair, first of all, is a large part of the image that we present to the community, to the external environment. And one of the reasons why I focus on our hair as a part of our image and how we present ourselves is because it's so huge in our lives. Even those people who don't spend a whole bunch of time on their hair, whether they want to or not, it's part of their image. One of the things, I've been natural since 1996, and I will have to say it's been a journey, which is really why I decided to take this approach. One, because I'm a photographer, of course, and two, because I've also, along the way, seen the image that other people present of us. For example, there's a project called the Coiffure Project. This project is not done by African-American women or African-American men. It's actually a white male who's presenting the Coiffure Project. It's more of a fascination with our hair. He had he's a photographer who had a assistant that was African-American. He decided he was fascinated with her hair, and he decided to take pictures of it, and he presented it as a coffee table book. And he doesn't say anything about the hair journey. It's just very a gawker approach to how other people see us. It doesn't define who we are as a person. And alone, our hair is nothing. Alone, our hair is just another part of us, but it doesn't tell our story. If you remember, also Chris Rock decided to tell our story.
Yeah.
So it was a big movie. I think people enjoyed it. It was a great insight. However, it was very one-sided, in my opinion. I didn't agree with a lot in the film. However, I think the point there is, too, African-American women have been a little focused on about their own story. There was a Time magazine, I mean, not a Time magazine, it was a USA Today News article that was talking about African-American women. So, and how we are now without husbands. So the image of us is we are without husbands, we're struggling, we are negative, we're angry. There's that ABW syndrome, angry black women syndrome, and all those things.
We have a theme for it now.
Right. So they've actually coined a phrase, and that's not the way that I perceive myself. So I think the hair journey, it's the project I'm doing is called The Natural Type, and it's a play on the typing that there was a hairstylist who came up how to type our hair, how curly it is, how straight it is. So it goes from 1 to 4, I think 4A, 4B, 4C, that type of thing. And you're aware of the typing, correct?
Yes, yes. Because I know I've got several friends in the hair care business, and they actually have to, you know, learn the types and so forth, and learn how each type responds to various chemicals. And so there's in ours, I guess. I forgot the technical name for it, but it's like super curly. Under a microscope, you see the coils, whereas, you know, that goes from that level all the way to the extreme straight type, which is what Asian hair generally reflects. And there's a name for each grade of hair, I guess you could call it, in terms of its wave pattern.
Exactly, exactly. And that's how I've decided to approach the book, the coffee table book that I'm aspiring to create. Basically, here, like I said before, here is a large part of how we present ourselves, whether it's professional. You know, we have professional styles. There's hair that's perceived as attractive or less attractive, maybe fun, sexy, playful, those sort of things. But what I've decided to do is capture the whole gambit, you know, whether, you know, and then not only capture the what our hair looks like, but what it means to us, what was our journey. First, I just talked to one young lady, and she decided to cut all her hair off, not because she had straight hair. She was natural, but it was time to cut her, because that's where she was in her journey. For me, I've seen personally very different reactions based on how I changed my hair. You know, when I first started out, the big chop is what everybody calls it. I chopped off all my hair, and actually, wow. I take that back. I chopped off the top part of my hair and kept the back long and permed.
That's a different look.
It was definitely different, and I was pushing the envelope very early on. However, I was very attached to the length of my hair. So, you know, the length has been a big issue. Whether or not my hair is coarse or how coily it is has been a big issue. What products I use, and you, like you said before, the industry, the hair care industry, is $800 billion industry.
Billion with a B. We're making some people rich. Now, I got a question because I had a man ask me the other day, why don't African-American women wear their natural hair anymore? Why are all of them wearing weaves? And I gave my answer, which is just an opinion, but I said, I think it's because they perceive that men like long, straight hair, and they're trying to be attractive to men. And other people who sell hair have capitalized on that, and so now everybody is getting their hair with weave attached. And so it's just become a way of life, and that's why it's so profitable. That's why we're spending billions with a B, because you have to get it done and then redone after a certain period of time and then redone again, and it adds up. So we're not the ones. I mean, we have some African-American hairdressers, but you look at other people who are selling us this hair, and they're making hand over fist and money, because we believe that we're more attractive to men if we have long, straight hair. What do you think about that?
Well, one, I would say, first of all, not everyone is wearing their hair with weave. I've never, ever worn a weave. I have worn extensions. I guess that's what we'll call the braids, and I've only been able to do it for like a week. I've never been able to have extensions in my hair for a long period of time. And secondly, yes, I do feel like that there is a move towards how we're perceived by other, you know, the opposite sex. Of course, we want to please them. Of course, we want to be attracted to them. Of course, we want to look fun, playful, and sexy at the end of the day. And if you turn on any media, what is attractive? If we turn on any type of, you know, we look at hair care commercials. Who's there? What do they look like? And how often are we seeing these images? These images inundate our lives daily. And so it may not be the fault of the opposite sex of what they perceive as sexy and attractive, but we've definitely bought into it, although I think we're doing better these days. I think we're moving more, because there was a time I couldn't find one African-American hair product that focused on natural hair. And now you can buy Shea Moisture, you can buy some other products that are indie products and not so highly commercial, but there is a focus on natural hair. There's YouTube. YouTube has been a great source of information for African-American women who want to go use their natural hair or wear their natural hair. Before, I mean, I was out in the wilderness. Now you can turn on and get some great advice from different people around the world. Like you said before, we're now a global village. So, and this, again, is why I decided to do the project, The Natural Type. I wanted to basically give a hands up, applaud the women who have chosen to do natural hair. And what the natural type is very different from person to person because everybody's journey is different. Yeah. I would like to for your listeners in the Chicago area, basically the natural type project is all of August. Is this an appropriate time to tell people when they can meet up to be a part of the project?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so beginning August 1st, on every Saturday in August, beginning August 1st, we meet at two times during the Saturday. And one is super, super early for some people. For me, it's a regular part of my life. We meet at 5:45 at 2152 East 71st Street at the Gallery Opera des Artes. And for short, we call it the Gallery ODA, but it's the Gallery Opera des Artes. It is a small visual arts gallery in South Shore of Chicago. We meet at 5:45 because we're trying to get the best light. It's a natural photography portrait.
So that's like the sunrise light that you're getting.
Yes, we call it God light. 5:45
a.m. All right.
So it'll be 5 a.m. But the second, there'll be two photo shoots. One is at 5:45 a.m. and the other is at 5:45 p.m. So we'll be doing two shoots every day for the week of for the month of August. Excuse me. And then drive to a location. It will be within 5 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes of where we are. But we want people to meet. They'll sign their release forms, fill out demo forms, and then go to the pre-scouted location. People will be able to pre-order their book. Anybody that comes out will be able to order their book for $25. The book will probably be in the range of $50 to $100. So if people come out, they can pre-order the book. If they're in the book, if they're pre-order the book for $25, if they're in the book. Everybody that comes out will get a free digital print. So they will get a free digital print. It will have my logo. My logo is Favor Studios. And they will be able to order additional prints if they want to. But everybody will be able to order the book because the book will be a coffee table book, which I don't know if you've ever bought coffee table books. They can be quite expensive. And so
yes,
$25.
I have one. Someone gives me the latest one that Oprah Winfrey put together. You know, very nice, very, very nice visual images. Of course, it's always nice to have a coffee table book. You know, as she says, it's on a coffee table, big book, you know, hardback. And it's a great conversation piece, as well as, of course, the subject matter is historical. And right. I think that it says a lot. You were telling me about the Caucasian gentleman who has put together a book out of his fascination with his assistant that was African-American. How do you think it happened that he saw something in us that we didn't see in ourselves, and now, of course, he's selling it to us? How do you think that happened that we didn't see it, that we didn't capitalize on that?
You know, I feel like, one, I will say, let me say this before I respond to that. One of some of the research that has been done has said that African-American women, despite what other people have said, are very resilient when it comes to their image. They actually, it's changing somewhat. But our culture tells us you're great just the way you are. That's why we haven't fallen into some of the anorexia and bulimia categories. As you know, by training, I'm a medical doctor. I don't practice. I've decided to take the creative route with my life, but I am a medical doctor by training. And some of the research that has been out there that I've done some research is on our self-image is actually really, really strong. We really, our ancestors, have really given us that padding where we say, oh, I look great just the way I am. I don't have to fight to be, a size zero. Now that is changing as we have the global connections and we're starting to look at more media and we're starting to listen to a little more media. However, we do have strong ties to our culture that tell us, you're great. That's why we can wear our hair purple and orange and wear the big hairdos and wear... Because we
are creative.
Yes, we actually have a positive self-image, whereas compared to Caucasian women, they actually have, they fight, they struggle with that. They struggle with their self-image. It's the reason why they look in the mirror and see a size, 12 when they're actually a size 2, you know. Mm. And so we have that as much as in our community, and it is tied to how we've actually been nurtured to grow up to understand that we are who we are, to be okay with that. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is we are a changer. And so, yes, we are starting to we are starting to have a problem with those images. And so we are not seeing our own beauty. And I fault the media. I fault not having those images out there. We don't have a lot of the control of the media is not us, but it's starting to be a little bit more available, just like you can have your Blog Talk Radio, which is great, by the way. Thank you for being there as a beacon for our voice. And I think this is just one way we can discuss our voice and one way we can present a positive image. And as far as the Quaffer Project, one of the motivations for doing this is finding out how much his book was. It was $125.
Oh, my
God. And I'm like, whoa.
$125.
Yes, that's
and,
one.
And I'm and sure so, people bought it, you know, because we will yeah. buy. Especially when other people sell it to us, which is it's an insanity I've never understood. But we tend to not see the value in ourselves until someone else sees it and then sells it to us, and then we buy it, but we didn't
right.
see it beforehand. So that's an economic thing we've got to change about ourselves, because what we have is so priceless. It's so beautiful. You know what? Whether it's our physical, like you say, the physical body that we have, women would love to have the ample rear end that we have that for years we had issues with because we thought it was too much, too big, and all that, trying to compress it in a girdle and everything. And now we see that historically this is something that women admire. That's what the bustles and the dresses that European women would wear, that's what it was imitating, the rear end of black women. So it's good that we have a better body image now than we used to have during that era when everybody was focusing on being skinny, and we finally realized that's not our body type, you know, and we should be comfortable with the body that we're in. It's especially made for us. The padding is good. It's necessary. It was, you know, part of an evolutionary process that helped us survive, even during lean times, you know. So we should embrace our look. But what have you observed? Well, we've got several callers that want to talk to you, and I'm going to bring them in just a moment. Let me ask you this question before we go to our next caller. What have you observed when it comes to the overall, I guess it's the discussions about obesity? And as a medical doctor, you know that there's a line between a natural body type that may be, as they say, big boned, and then there is the unhealthy, excessive weight. What have you observed about that? I've had friends who have traveled abroad and been away for years, and they came back and they said, what happened to all the African-American women? Why are they all overweight? Do you see it as a health issue? Is it what we're eating? Is it stress? Is it, you know, what is it? Are we evolving into people that are larger than we should be? And how do we correct that without us getting that extreme low self-esteem that white women have developed because of the obsession with weight loss? But you know, how do we get back to what is healthy and what is natural?
So that's a great question, and it's very well timed, especially in these days. Actually, America overall is getting to be larger than the rest of the world. Just overall, anywhere, hands down, we're larger than anybody else. Part of the issue is overconsumption. We have more everything, and it's available, it's easily available. At McDonald's, you can get a burger for $1. So why not go for the cheapest? For many of us, the cheapest route is the easiest route. It's quick, it's convenient. And where do we stand in that, especially as African-American women? Yes, there is a line between moderation and more. And so I think we've gotten beyond moderation and have moved on to more. And so because of that, we are getting beyond the voluptuous to definitely obese. And again, back to how we are perceived by African-American males in this case. African-American males celebrate, you know, the big behind. You know, the big behind is mine. So they celebrate that. Women want to attract our African-American men, and so we think that without any, the word I'm trying to grab here is without any type of control, we let our, you know, butts get bigger for our men. However, we need to have a lifestyle that is healthy, and your weight will be optimal based on your lifestyle. Your optimal weight, you don't have to go eat, yogurt every day. You know, that people would like to, that when they don't want to eat healthy or they need to have an excuse, they typically talk about the extreme lifestyle that many people, many non-African-American women adopt, which is, oh, you got to eat yogurt. You never get to eat anything but salad. And even salad can be bad for you if it's not eaten in moderation and you don't control what you eat. But we got to educate ourselves. We got to learn what's good for us. And don't forget to exercise. So lifestyle is basically what we need to focus on. And, yes, we are not getting the message, and we are going beyond moderation and more and into the more category where we are obese. And if you notice, walk down any street in Chicago, you know, which women do you see and how many of those women? Count 10. Count the next 10 women that you see and tell me what it is that you see. Do you see a nice, voluptuous woman, or do you see someone who's struggling to get on the bus, someone who's struggling to get in their seat with their mini bag, or someone who's struggling to walk down the street or struggling to hold their body inside of their clothing? So,
I like you put that, struggling to hold their body inside their clothing. but that's what it is. You know, and I don't make fun of people, but I think we do have to be conscious of when we are growing and when we have outgrown the clothing that we used to fit. And it's not healthy to have your seams, you know, bursting because you are no longer the size you were when you bought that outfit. So we do have to, you know, consult the mirror. It's not telling us a lie, you know. And if it says you've gained a few pounds, you know, believe it and buy a bigger size so that you can breathe. It's healthy, you know, to be able to breathe in your clothes and not be struggling to stay in them, you know. And I think that I've seen, you know, when I see films where they have maybe a certain personality type, and they will cast a large African-American woman in a certain role with a certain aggressive kind of personality, I'll notice that they maybe dress her and close it a little bit too tight. And it's a subtle image, but I know it's deliberate because, you know, filmmakers, they know how to create an image that says something. And I noticed that that image of the African-American, that's, you know, woman who's voluptuous, you know, and bursting out of her clothing, a lot of people find it a little bit amusing, but we should really think about, do we want to be the butt of jokes because of our size and our not recognizing that our clothes need to fit and not be...
Yes.
About to burst, you know, and it's a health issue because, you know, you need to be able to breathe. You need to be able to move freely. But we do have that image, and a lot of people have asked, you know, what's up with the women and their, you know, large size and, you know, what are we doing? But you make a great point. It's Americans in general that have been over-consumptive and have gotten obese. Well, we've got a lot of people that want to talk to you. So we're going to go to our phone lines, and you're listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naeem Latif, and our guest today is Miss Delicia Kinney. And she is, in addition to being a photographer, of course, is an MD, a medical doctor, but she's working on a book that you need to have on your coffee table. And it's a reminder of the beauty around us and within us, African-American natural hair, and all the expressions of our beauty. It would be a wonderful conversation piece, but we've got some history behind that hair. We'll talk about it, but let's first take a few calls. And we've got a friend at 773-619. Thank you for joining us on The Female Solution. Give us your name and your question or comment.
Hello.
Yes. Good morning.
Yes. Hi, Neymar Virginia, the coffee lady.
Ah, yes. Good morning. How are you?
I got your message as I was about to get out of bed. So I said, I can't miss this. I've been listening to you for a bit there. My thing is, I think our biggest problem as Africans in America is that we have never truly known our history. We don't know so much about us until we take on the traits of anything that comes by, anybody that comes by. We've never had the true understanding of our connection to Africa. There was a point in time somewhere that most of us might remember when the state of Illinois passed that African-American history would be taught in the schools. It never got passed other than being passed. Nobody in our community pushed it, and at this day, it still is not being taught, and they've closed down 50 of the schools. So it's getting less and less of our history, our visibility, and if we aren't careful, we're going to become a mute person or a mute race of people. That's my opinion.
Now, when was that law passed? Because I remember it vaguely, but you're right. I don't think we really jumped on that the way we jumped on, say, Brown versus the Board of Education and the lawsuit and integrating the schools. I don't think we were as conscious about that legislation. Can you give us the history of that? What year was that?
I can't give you the year, but I'll tell you who brought it up. Remember when Florence Cox was the president of, I think, the school board or something?
Yes.
And several other African Americans got together, wrote the program. I've seen and heard her talk about this. She wrote it, and it was passed, like we say, and it was supposed to go into effect on a certain such a day. But you know, and I know too, in this world that we live in, if you don't market your product, I don't give a damn what it is, if you don't market it, the world ain't going to market it for you. And I think that's where they dropped the ball.
Right.
That's why we are in some of the predicaments that we're in. We don't know our history. We don't read our history. And we have very little when it comes to the elders who are around, who really know the history, to even tell it to us. Because it used to be a time we used to have storytelling. You'd come and sit at the feet of grandma and grandpa, and I used to do it myself. My grandpa was a coffee lover. He sat in his yard because he fell off a horse and he was crippled. But he sat in the yard and everybody who, well, I lived in the country, so that's another story. But everybody that came by the road of our house just about knew my grandpa. They would stop and talk with him. He'd have his coffee out there. And they would talk for hours. I was the oldest grandchild. I'd sit there and listen for hours. I didn't know what I was listening to back then, but now I can appreciate it.
Right.
That's where we missed it. We wasn't reading, but we were telling stories and telling the history. Because, you know, history is only his history.
Who's telling the story? And you know, the fact that it's a law, I think that we should have jumped on that and made sure that all of the schools were teaching, not just African-American schools or predominantly African-American.
It was everybody.
We need to make sure everybody. Yes, we needed to make sure that everybody learned about us.
And then another thing, they took civics out of school, so you don't know the law.
Right.
I mean, you can go back a lot and explain why the predicament is what it is right now.
Yes. Well, I definitely agree. Well, now, Delicia, do you think that it would make a difference in the attitudes of young white and Hispanic and Asian and other ethnic groups, if they learned our history and had an appreciation of what we have survived in America, which is so much unique, much more unique than other cultures than their experiences here. Do you think it would help our relations if they learn more about
us? I do, because not only...
Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
No.
Yeah, sorry. We got a little background noise.
Is based on falsehood, images that they have created of us, not our real image. And in the South, those images was based off of the racism that was there. And some of it is carried over. In fact, quite a bit of it is carried over, but it is very subtle. Because everybody now thinks that they have totally arrived.
Yeah, I think that's also... reflective in someone mentioned that that Justin Bieber is now one of the hottest entertainers among young people, and we know that he's an imitation of African American singing and dancing. We know that, and it's kind of the same thing they did with Elvis. You know, it's like we're gonna get a good imitation of what you do. And we'll make that person a multimillionaire rather than acknowledge that you're the one that we're really imitating and pay you, the original, for what you do. So we see that all the time, whereas we're dismissed for what we do. But when other people imitate it, then it's praised and highly sought after and highly paid for.
Yes.
So we've got to... we have to admire ourselves and appreciate ourselves and pay ourselves for what we are.
That's
before
exactly.
Other people give their stamp of validation on it, we should be able to validate our own worth.
Well, again, you said something that was really which is appreciate our own worth. And as we were in the CAP meeting, the photography meeting yesterday, our weapon of choice, what is going to be your weapon of choice? Everybody can choose their weapon of choice. For me, it's medicine and it's photography. Someone else, it might be to do good. But for me, and for some of us, it might be visual art. At the gallery Opera Day Arte on 71st Street, you know, they're beautiful images, beautiful oil paintings. Leslie Bernardo Dixon, who's the owner, is one of the
did you give our receipt?
I guess you can identify positive images of us. You know, women who have strong features and that look like us, whose hair is natural. He just produces these beautiful oil paintings, which is one of the reasons I've aligned myself as a director of the gallery is because I believe in the images that he's producing. But guess what? Very few people have visited since our November opening. Very few people are reveling in the beauty that we present. You know, because it's so few, far, and in between, when you see a beautiful image, when you see something positive that's African-American or Africans in America, as the Miss Coffee Lady said, we should definitely gravitate towards that. We should run towards it. And we should definitely grab a young person and pass it on. And like she said, our stories are getting lost. Our stories, and in a minute, it'll be historical genocide, you know, basically. Nobody will know the stories or how to pass them on. And so that we've got to choose our weapon of choice. Like I said, for me, it's photography. Ms. Naima, your weapon of choice is your voice as well. And so and we don't need to stop that. We need to perpetuate it. And I want to go back to the first question that you asked me about improving our relations with other people and the images that they see. Can education do that? I think you have to be very, very careful. The coffee lady was right that we should jumped on it, but were we the ones going to be presenting that information? Who was going to create this curriculum? Right now, they do talk about slavery in the schools. It's like maybe 20 pages. It may be less than that, and it's probably not taught with the focus on what needed to be focused on, the brutality, how long it went on. You know, they might say, oh, it happened, you know, but it's very watered-down version of what slavery actually is and what it did to our community and our culture.
Yes, yes, and they may feel like, well, yeah, we mentioned slavery, so, hey, we do it. We tell about African-Americans. And like you say, you know, they get about 10 minutes out of the whole history lesson. You know,
exactly.
We brought you here as slaves, and Lincoln freed you, and then you got your civil rights with Dr. Martin Luther King, and there you go. You know, gave about 5 minutes, and we're done. So that's pretty much how we've capitalized African-American history. And so you're right. We have to define what it is that we want people to know about us. Well, let me take another call here. We've got our friend at 773-268. Thank you for joining us on The Female Solution. Give us your name and your question or comment.
Yes, my name is Rachel Traynor, and I had called Friday. Mr. Plump had told me to call, and he had told me to call today to let y'all know that we was talking about y'all, talking about July 22nd at 5630 South Halsted in our meeting, and me and Mr. Plum, we will be out there Tuesday at 10 a.m.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Well, I thank you for certainly reiterating that, and we will be talking about that later on in the show as well. You know, we've got to collectively work toward bringing higher consciousness to our people, and on those places where we have not been good neighbors and we have not been peaceful neighbors, we have to bring peace to our neighbors and bring good energy, good thoughts, bring our prayers, bring our words, bring our presence to those places before violence erupts. So as she said, and I thank you for that call, as she said, we'll be gathering at 5630 South Halsted at 10 a.m. Tuesday morning to bring some good energy to that spot in Englewood where we've had a little bit of a unpleasantness. And before the violence erupts, we want to come and change the energy in that place and bring a spirit of joy and peace. So, yes, we will certainly be doing that. You know, that brings me to the thought, so many people who travel here, and I always run into tourists downtown, and, you know, I try to strike up a conversation about what their impressions are of the city. And I've run into a number of people who have said that they have been warned to stay away from certain South Side and West Side neighborhoods where African Americans live. People who have traveled here and have been planning to relocate here or considering relocating here, they have said that it frightens them, and they get the impression that people just walk down the street with guns just shooting people at random in places like Englewood and the Austin community on the West Side. How do we deal with that excessive negative imagery to the point where people are afraid even to drive through the places where we live? How do we combat that? You know, at the meeting yesterday, they said it may be 10% of the people, they said 2% of the people that actually creates all this havoc, but that becomes 99% of what is in the news. And so it has an impact on what people believe about us. How do we change the balance of that and make our voices stronger so that we can change that image of who we are?
So I guess you got to remember that the media is in the business of media. Sensationalism is definitely one of the things that they're in the business of doing, and they do it well. And so they're going to take the negative and amplify that and make it look as if all the Southside is only about negativity. However, we can combat those images ourselves one person at a time. When I'm downtown and I see somebody, and as you know, let me just say, the French in France, when they have a tourist come here, they have in their brochure of how far they can go down the numbers before they'll get to the bad, quote-unquote, neighborhood. So it is actually in tourist brochures that the south side of Chicago, past a certain number, is not touristable, if you will, which is a problem, number one. So that's it's worldwide. Our image is definitely global. And secondly, I start with me. You know, the angry black woman syndrome, anytime I have a conversation with, you know, some of our people or other people, I say, when have you ever met me? And the first reaction that you got was angry. When have you ever spoken to me? You know, I had somebody tell me one time I was walking in Home Depot, oh, you look angry. I said, why is that? Tell me what you see. Why do you think I'm angry? I think that's more of your issue versus mine, because I'm feeling great today. How
right.
are you?
Just because you don't have a big grin on your face doesn't mean you're angry. Right. You might have just
right.
a serious facial expression. But now I remember, I'm trying to think if it was Newsweek or Time Magazine. I'm thinking it was Time Magazine. I remember they printed this, I guess it was supposed to be a joke, of this cartoon of President Barack Obama and his wife,
mm-hmm.
Michelle Obama. And she had the big afro and the army fatigues, and they were doing the fist bump, and, you know, and you know, they were trying to make a joke out of his presidency, of course, and perhaps the fears that white Americans had of this radical black couple in the White House. And
mm-hmm.
the interesting thing was, of course, that was symbolized by, you know, the big Angela Davis-style afro. Hair does
right.
make a political statement. And
right.
for some reason, natural hair has been a controversial thing, even in the workplace. I remember lawsuits that African-American women filed because they, I can't remember the year, but a woman was fired because she had the braids, and she was told this was not part of the corporate uniform, and so she had to file a lawsuit. People have filed lawsuits because of wearing locks and being told that that's not appropriate. I think the Army recently had some standards that had changed according to what is an acceptable hairstyle for African-American women, and I think one of it was no locks, no braids, and that sort of thing. So our hair just has such a deep meaning, but what is it about certain styles that symbolize radical political thought or militancy? What would happen if Michelle Obama was to, say, start growing locks? What do you think would be the impression that, and the political statement that would make in the minds of a lot of people?
Wow. As you can see, you know, our First Lady has done a lot of great things for the image of African-American women. However, do I think that she would have been able to pull it off with a natural hairstyle? Unfortunately, I'm going to say no. I know, the realism in me says, no, she couldn't have done it. No, I don't think Obama would have gotten elected had she been a little more outwardly militant. But if you notice, she does allow her daughters to wear braids. You know, they haven't done it lately, but when she, you know, she was able to wear braids, they were wearing braids, and it was a great issue. I mean, not an issue, but they did talk about it, definitely. So there is an image being presented. We present images. When you think of Angela Davis, what do you think about? The afro, right?
Yes.
When you think is it Toni Morrison, you think of her locks. So definitely, and then these women have distinctive statements, which again is why I wanted to do my coffee table book, because the natural type, each journey, each woman is different. We're not interchangeable. You know, my afro is not interchangeable with Angela Davis's, you know, neither is my neighbor's. I wanted people to understand that it's not just hair. It's not just about our hair, and we're not just making one statement. For me, like I said, I'm a single woman. I dated, and when I pressed my hair and it looked like a perm, I definitely got a different pool of men. Whereas when I wear my hair in an afro or afro puff and I rock it rough and tough, again, a definitely different pool of men that are attracted to my statement that I'm making with my hair. And it's not always a statement. Sometimes I just get frustrated with my hair, and that's what it's going to be today. So I think that the First Lady would definitely was a would have – even though we elected Obama, we also elected her as well. So I do feel like she that afro would have been a different – and it also, I think they tried to perpetuate angry black woman syndrome. Not once have I seen her, except when it was appropriate, you know, when she was upset with some of the outcomes.
They always try to see if they can catch her with an angry look on her face, because they got the tabloids that like to promote some kind of idea of them having marital strife. So if they can ever catch her unsmiling or with her arms folded, I mean, they will jump on that in a heartbeat, because they, well, you know, I'm sure it sells papers. But what is it? Well, you know, I'm curious as to what was the different caliber of men that you attracted with the natural hair as opposed to the straight hair. I mean, I have a theory about that, but I'd just like to know, what was your experience?
Well, I would say that the men who were more attracted to natural hair, I want to say they might have been a little more in touch with who they were as a people. The men that were attracted to my straighter hair was definitely more attracted to those people who carried themselves with weave, who decide. And again, I have nothing against perms or weaves. I just feel like that one of the reasons why I chose my hair was because I wasn't comfortable with my own hair. You know, oh, it's nappy, as some people would say, which now I try to use it as it's nappy and it's great. You know, it's who I am. It's how I was born and how I'm chosen to go out of this life. Not, there's no way we're going to wear weave, you know, out this, you know, we get 80, we're not going to be putting weight. Well, I don't know, times are changing. So, but like you said, you know, these different caliber of men were definitely attracted to something. And I would, again, go back to media, and I know I keep blaming the media, but really we have to take our own image in our hands and give it back to the world. We can't just say, well, they do this and they do that. Well, what do we do? So these men that the women have to take back their image. They have to tell the men that it's not okay for you to look at me this way or that way, and here's why I'm going to wear my natural hair, and here's why I'm going to wear permed hair and promote natural women, you know. So I would love to hear your theory on what you think that these men had in mind, but the more positive men that I've met have loved natural hair women, and you'll hear it. Sometimes you'll hear it come out their mouth, and then they do another thing, so they haven't quite gotten all the way to reformation. So they'll say, oh, I love women with natural hair, and you'll see that is the opposite on their arm. So your thought process on that. And by the way, that you were trying to figure out, it was the New Yorker that had Michelle Obama on the cover.
That's what it was. It was the New Yorker. Yeah. Right. I remember, yes. And, well, my theory, just based on experiences that I've had, men who are attracted to natural hair, and men, feel free to call in and, you know, give your opinion. But I find that men who are attracted to natural hair seem to be more culturally conscious, they tend to be men who read more books as opposed to more influenced by TV. They tend to be more intellectual in terms of having read more history been more in touch, like you said, more in touch with their own racial identity. That's just my experience that I've had. men who tend to be into the straight hair tend to be more influenced by the dominant white culture's standards of what is correct behavior. They tend to be what the conscious community calls unconscious, meaning mm-hmm. that they are being led and manipulated and they're not aware of it. So
right.
I find that that tends to be the difference. And in terms of hair, now I wear my hair wrapped sometimes. I'm a Muslim. Sometimes, I wear the covering and all of that. But sometimes I don't. And it's because, my hair needs to breathe sometime. And I know a lot of women who are starting to lose their hair around the edges because they've been wearing these tight turbans and so forth, or they may turn gray prematurely because your hair is not getting enough oxygen. So, for health reasons and so forth. And, a little bit of vanity, but so what? But, I don't always cover my hair. And I wear natural hair. So it does make a statement about who I am and who I've defined myself as, but I find that men who are into long, straight hair, whether it's natural or weave, they do tend to buy into the media image of what is beauty. And you have a right to have your own aesthetic appeal, but with that comes a lot of the other brainwashing that comes through the media. So I find that people who read more, people who are more culturally conscious, more politically conscious, tend to have more appreciation for natural hair because they understand historically what that represents and how we've had to fight for the right to be ourselves and how our natural beauty is a reflection of their empowerment as men, because when your woman can look like herself, that means you as a man have power. When your woman has to look like somebody else, that means you as a man are less powerful. And they know that, so they know what you represent.
That's a great way to put that, and I even might use one word like maturity. And it might be conscious maturity. If I had to use one word, it would be maturity. The more mature men that I've met, which is how you put it, they read more, they're a little more sophisticated. And that's how I would put that and use the word maturity in there. So,
I agree.
And I think that natural women, attract the few more mature. We still get those who have not matured quite yet, but for the most part, when there is a man that can appreciate a black woman for who she is, where she who she is as a woman without all the extraness, I guess you want to put it, without all the makeup, without all the and I wear makeup, don't get me wrong. People also assume. And that's why, again, I wanted to present some hair journeys, because there are women who just want, maybe they just wanted to do fashion. Maybe they were, it is a vanity issue for them, but that's one story. And the other story may be, I hear a lot of that I was perming my hair, and it just, my hair decided it wasn't right for it because it began to fall out. It began to have, like you said, around the edges, they began to get alopecia, where the hair won't grow back anymore. And it's because they've, mismanaged their hair by adding weave too tightly or putting in the chemicals. And that can take a toll. It is a health issue for your hair. And that can take a toll on your hair. And for some people, they've only been able to rejuvenate it by going natural. So.
Yes, and that's what a lot of women are learning, is that if they want to keep their hair, they can't keep pulling it and stretching the roots of it with weave, because, you find yourself going bald around the edges, and that's not very attractive. So it's a health issue also.
Yes, yes. So vanity, is a catch-22 there. So, I still... There is a divisive nature sometimes in this discussion, and I don't want that to be this tip, particular discussion in where, you know, the permed hair versus the natural hair. No, how you choose to wear your hair is how you choose to wear your hair. And everybody, even the permed hair women, have a journey. However, I choose to focus on the natural hair journey just because it seems to be more of a challenge and against the social norm. Like, and again, when we go back to Michelle Obama, I don't think she could have challenged the social norm in that manner and still have gotten the response that she's gotten, which has been positive for the most part, in my opinion. And that New Yorker image where she has a fro, it was in July, I think it was in July of 2008,
yeah.
And that's right before that he got elected. So it could have, you know, once people saw that could have definitely been something that was negative in his campaign. You know, people could have saw that as negative.
Yeah.
So it was definitely an issue. Had she had that pro, I'm not sure that she would have been, you know, that couple would have been around in the White House. So
it's amazing. Afro could have got you out of the White House, could have kept you from getting elected. That's amazing. But, you know, our hair is a political issue. Well, can you stay with us for the second hour? Because I know you've got a busy day, but you've got some people lined up that want to talk to you.
Sure.
Yeah, a few more minutes. Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Well, you're listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif. And today we've got with us as our special guest a great lady you need to know and you need to get ready to get her coffee table book. This is Delicia Kenny Dye. Is that pronouncing that right? Dye?
D is D. It's a
D.
A unique one, as we all know. D Y I.
Oh,
I spell D. Yes, yes.
Ah. FYI, it's D Y I. All right.
It's
Delicia D. Kenny. And this MD turned photographer has seen with her creative eye the beauty of African American women and their hair. And she's putting together a beautiful coffee table book. And you can be a part of it if you're in and around the Chicagoland area. Be a part of this historic representation of our beauty. And who knows, it might even embolden our first lady to go ahead and get that action. Well, we'll be right back after this quick break, and we're coming to some more calls. So 773-619-661-748 and 636-466, we're coming to you next. And we'll also be joined by a great photographer and one with historic vision. He's traveled around the world, Brother Curtis Kojo Morrow. Will be joining us to talk about some of his international images and what he's experienced in his travels as he's heard from other people what they think about African Americans. We'll be right back after this quick break. If you're listening online, give us a call, 347-539-5639. Press 1 when you're ready to join in. You're listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif, and I'll be right back after this quick break. So stay with us.
What happens when a group of people are kidnapped from their homes, smuggled away in chains, and held captive in a foreign land where they are tortured, raped, and forced to perform hard labor by the lash of a whip and under the constant threat of death? Slavery, the African American psychic trauma. What happened to the doctors, writers, scientists, builders, educators, and spiritual leaders from Africa's golden age? Who did they really capture and sell into slavery? Are all African Americans suffering from psychic trauma because of a conspiracy to hide their true identities? Do you have psychic trauma? Take the test on page 22 of the book and see. Order it online today at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. And get your personally autographed copy of the book, Slavery, the African American Psychic Trauma.
Hey, my name is Dolphin Norris. I'm with Life Builders United. You can reach us on lifebuildersunited.org. Our theme is to build families, to build community. Our philosophy is on a four-legged stool of self-sufficiency, and that is build where you live, grow what you eat, sow what you wear, and buy where you own. That ends slavery. Thank you.
We're back. You're listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif. And we've asked the question, what is the global image of African-American culture? We've got with us today great photographer Delicia D. Kenny. And she is putting together, what is the title of the book, the coffee table book that...
The Natural Type. The Natural Type. It's called The Natural Type.
The Natural Type. Yes. And we know that we have had some issues with our hair, but when you see it and see the beauty of it, I remember as a child being shown braids of African women in the Ebony magazines way back in the 60s, you know, before it was ever popularized at all. And I thought it was so beautiful. And as soon as I saw it, I learned how to braid, and I used to wear my hair a lot of decorative cornrow styles and so forth because it's unique. We have that kind of a texture to our hair that enables us to do so many creative things with it, but we've got to see the beauty in it. And I'm so glad that you're putting together a book because, as you say, it is, you know, this white guy, great that he saw the beauty, but $125 for a book, you know, is great. But if we're going to pay $125, we need to pay you $125 because you can give us the history behind the hair, beyond just the hairstyle, because it's definitely more than a hairdo. Well, we've got another great photographer on the line with us, a member of the Chicago Association of African American Photographers, and this is a brother you should know if you have not heard him in various venues. He's been around for a long time, enough to be called a historian through his artwork and his photography, Brother Curtis Kojo Morrow. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, how you doing, Nima? I'm doing great here. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, glad to be with you this morning.
Yes, sir. Well, certainly an honor and a pleasure to be with you. And you are author of a number of books and your travels. What fascinated me when you first told me the story of going overseas, and I believe it was during the Korean War.
Yeah.
Where you said that they were saying to the black soldiers, why are you here? And, you know, and you kind of realize, wait a minute, they're seeing us as freedom fighters just as they are. How can we in good conscience kill these people?
Yeah, that was an ordeal. But, you know, at the time I was 17 years old.
Wow.
In fact, on my 18th birthday, I had been on the front line 4 months and with 5 more to go. And, you know, the Korean War, that was one of the, it was the last, really last conventional war, you know, like trench war, we had in World War II. So it was a very man-on-man, you know, soldier-on-soldier, you know, it was like a nightmare, you know, to cut it short, like it was something unbelievable. You just can't believe how, you know, you seem like you hope that you wake up in a moment and realize it was one of those nightmares, dreams, you know.
Wow.
But anyway, all my Africa, it opened my eyes to other countries, you know, other people, different cultures and so forth, and which encouraged me, enabled me to, encouraged me to, you know, to travel. After I, you know, got out of the Army, you know, dishonorable discharge, I did 4 years there. And I was stationed in Japan for 2.5 years. That is what opened my eyes to, you know, I got a chance to get involved in the culture there and even learn the language, you know. And on my return, you know, to the States from there, I hung around here for about 9 years in the States. And checked out different organizations, and I heard about Nkrumah, and decided to go to Africana, and so I went. You know, it started as a 3-week vacation, and because I had planned to stay at least a year, you know, to paint and accumulate art, and that was my means. So that was to be my means of survival. You know, by sending paintings back to the States, I had a friend in the States here, had an art gallery up in Harlem. And but that didn't work out, you know, and Nkrumah government was overthrown. Mm. And, you know, I decided to stick around. And it was about maybe a couple of dozen other Afro-American. They were, you know, entrepreneurs. and also educators. The majority of them was educators. You know, they taught at the university there at Legon. And so it was like my whole experience there was like being in a classroom, you know, because it was so often, you know, when we touched bases with each other, you know, they would talk about what they were doing, you know, like their studies, economics, social, you know, science or whatever they was teaching there. And so it was, and then with the peoples, I got a chance to learn the cultures, the different tribes, and also a bit of the language. And am I still here?
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay, I'm going on and on. And so, you know, one of the first things I had to learn, and a brother, he said, look, man, walk tall. You know, feel, you got to develop a sense of entitlement. You know, like the average Caucasian have here,
yeah.
They have a sense of entitlement, like they belong here, you know, mm-hmm. like we belongs here, you know, as Afro. And that's kind of hard, you know, when you've never been exposed to those different, you know, you feel like you, if you travel to any country, the people there, the indigenous people, that they have that feeling of entitlement.
And,
like,
and you don't realize you don't have it until you go someplace and you see where they do have it.
Yes, you're right.
It's like
you know,
we
you
always
really
feel like outsiders in the country
right.
of our birth.
Yeah, you have to go outside your box. And then you begin to think the thing that people use to intimidate us here, it just don't work when you do that. You know, you talk to any person who have lived outside a different country, you know, for, say, at least 3 years or so, you know, they are usually they are self-sustaining people, you know. A lot of things that would insult us, it doesn't, it's just like a water on a duck, you know, it just bounce off, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It means that the peoples who are trying to intimidate us with words usually, I mean, they got a problem. They the one that have the problem. You know, and most of the time it's true ignorance. You know, that was the first time I heard someone ask a Caucasian, why do they not like black people or people of other races? And they could never give an answer. You know,
there's
they
no
could,
intelligent
you know,
answer.
They couldn't give an answer. They were, you know, the ones who try, they would say, well, that's what, you know, they was taught that.
Right.
They was actually taught that.
Well, you know.
But, go ahead.
That's what we have to realize, is that that's a sickness, to dislike someone because of their physical appearance.
Yeah.
That is
yeah.
extreme immaturity.
Mm-hmm. And I'm listening to your program about the, yeah, about the hair, the good hair, bad hair thing, you know. Well, you know, that's just all part of it, you know. It's
yeah.
part of it. And also that's, you know, some of those images are spreading to even to Africa. You know, I met people, women, who were using that skin lightening, you
well,
know,
that's
lightening
what I was
stuff.
Going to ask you about, because yeah. I'm hearing that spreading, that not just the skin lightener, the hair weave, the, you
yeah,
know, the whole
yeah.
thing of trying to get as close to European as possible. So
right.
what does that reflect when women begin to alter themselves? Does it reflect a loss of political power of the people? Because you say, you know, there's a period of time when you go to the country and the people, you know, they have an attitude like, you know, we own this. This is our land. We belong here.
Yeah.
And they walk tall and they're not intimidated. They're not shrinking back. They're not fearing being stopped and searched by police and all that sort of thing that we go through. So there's a different attitude of confidence.
Yeah.
What happened that caused that to begin to change? Is it
yeah.
loss of power, loss of
no,
what?
I think, well, you know, it's a little all of above. I don't know too much about, I don't think it's too much about loss of power, of sense of being, because they still have that, because that's what they was born with. You know, it's like they want to be like what they think we are. You know, they want to be, because, you know, like our history, imagine this now. Hundreds of years ago, some of their people were sold now into slavery, right? And say 400 or 500 years later, the ancestors of those people return. I'm talking about Afro-American. They return.
Yeah.
And most of us who return is in a better position than our brothers and sisters there, mm-hmm. financially or knowledge-wise, you know. Mm. So they want to be like us.
So they're
admiring
us. That's interesting.
Yeah, they want to be. But then afterwards, you know, they have great minds. So after they're here for a minute, you know, then they say, oh, hey, this ain't nothing, you know. So they began to fulfill their mission, which is to get educated, to get their families over, you know, so they can take advantage of some of the opportunities, many of the opportunities that we, our race, I mean Afro-Americans, have paved the way for, you know, like the civil rights and all that. And they come in and they capitalize, you know, which is okay. I don't have no problem with it. I don't have any problem with anyone trying to develop themselves, you know, like leaving Haiti or Mexico or whatever, you know. They're coming here to develop themselves in order to help their families, you know. Because you see, now, when I was there, it was like 1965, from 65 to 76. So that's like 11 years, right? Okay. Well, I went back, and then when I was there now, I never saw a telephone. Well, yeah, I saw some, but there was no telephones in where I was. You know, and usually when you find someone that had a telephone, it wasn't working, you know, because somebody might cut the wire they used to make bracelets with, you know.
Oh,
yeah, you know, it was just like that. If you wanted to send a message to someone, you have to, it would go by word of mouth. Like if I know you're going to the market, I would say, okay, Naima, if you see so-and-so and so-on there, tell him I said, are we going to have this next week, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the way, and
the grapevine,
then the,
huh?
Yeah, the grapevine, and then you know we had the drums and so forth in the forest, you know. So all that, but then when I returned in 2007, that's 50 years after Ghana's independence. Wow, even the little babies in the bush had cell phones.
Oh man.
Yeah, you know, because their family members is sending it to them. You know, they send them everything. There was vehicles, there was traffic jams. I couldn't even imagine traffic jams in Accra. You know, when you could sit at the time that I was there, you could count the cars as they passed in Kruger Circle. So now
they have everything that we have plus and probably all the problems that we
have.
Yeah,
but you know what? They are smart, you know, because many Ghanaians has been here before, you know, back in the day, early day, from Nkrumah on up, you know. And so they say they're not going to tolerate certain things that we are tolerating with here. Like you go to prison there, you really don't go but once. Because it's not a place that the prison authority, they are in charge. You know, when they say run, you run.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's no, you know, you could get bit by a snake in a prison, or you could get very ill with malaria or something like that. Because people, the society, I mean, they don't have time to spend money and time on someone that's been stealing from them, you know, or breaking the law when they are trying to develop their resources. So they don't tolerate a lot of things. Now, in the cities, sure, you may see the miniskirts and the, I don't think you'll see too much skin lightening because that was sort of outlawed because it was causing cancer on the, you know, facial skin cancer.
Oh,
because, you know, around the edge, you know, it would break out in sores.
Oh.
So I think a lot of the young ladies stopped doing that, you know. But for the other thing, I mean, they want the same thing, but they are still maintaining their culture. And all you need to do is go, anyone needs to, is just go out to the interior, you know, the tribal. There are certain things that we just, I mean, that when I say we now, because I adopted so many, that you don't do. You just out of respect. You never disrespect an elder. The older a person gets, the more respect. You know, that's the quickest way to get expelled or deported from Africa, period, is to insult an elder.
Well,
I keep
hearing that is just a taboo in so many places, and we have lost that here.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it has to do with the several generations of babies having babies, so to speak. You know, young people who had children who had not attained a level of maturity themselves and did not gain the respect of the children that they raised. They may have been raised in a house with the child because their parents, they're still living with their parents, and so they almost were viewed as a sibling. So, you know, you have your son or daughter that's calling you by your first name, just like your parents are, because, you know, you're looking more like their big sister than their mother, and just the whole disrespect chain of events that happens. But that, well, you know, one thing I wanted to ask you about, and maybe we can take a look at what the trends are. When you see the evolution of the culture over time and you've traveled back after, you know, 20 years and so forth, does it appear that Africans admire African-Americans for whatever it is we're doing, the good and the bad, and are imitating a lot of what they see as our behavior, a lot of what's been projected on movies and things like that? Does it seem like they're now imitating us?
Yeah, you know what? Yes, they are. But you know who they are admiring? They are admiring people like you, like sisters like you. They are admiring educated people. They are educated business, Afro-American entrepreneurs. Afro-American entrepreneurs are going there, establishing business. Educators are retired, they're retired here. They are going to Africa, especially places like Ghana and South Africa too now, and other countries in Africa. And they are building their second home there. They are becoming part of the culture. You know, that's some well-kept secret, which, you know, but there's quite a few. Yes, those are the ones.
So we're having an impact on the inside.
Oh, definitely. And a good one. But, you know, all the negative ones, that's the one that they're going to stay away from. I mean, they're steering away from it because it's harmful to their whole society, and they know it. You know, it's easier to see something when you look from the outside. Like this, I mean, what we hear here is a lot of negative things, just like they hear negativeness from us here, I mean, from America here.
Right.
But that's just a percentage, and you hit it. You said, I feel the same thing. It's about 2%. That's what sells newspapers. It's what sells advertisement. It sells security bars and locks and, you know, that's what sells.
Fear sells.
Oh, man. And it sells armory, too.
Yeah.
So that's what we hear. We hear a horrible incident like this 200 young ladies, women that was kidnapped there. Yeah, it's horrible. You know, but then, too, we don't hear, and they hear about things like, well, say, we're going to war. I mean, I'm talking about the government. Policing, set ourselves up as police of the world. You know, like, I mean, we're bombing countries, you know, with high-power, sophisticated bomb in the name of freedom. What's that? So that's what they hear on that side. But we don't, you notice there are certain things that we don't hear because it says, oh, it's too graphic. Like, I wrote a book about my personal experience in Korea, right? You're familiar with it. What's a coming over down to black people, you know. Now, that's the personal experience of a young black man in the service fighting for his country, fighting for his life. That's what it boils down to.
Right, because you get there and people shooting at you, but you got to shoot back or die. You know,
any soldier in any war, that's what you are fighting for is your life. When you return, well, you know, you say what people want to hear. I'm fighting for a country. And you are, because usually the military is not the one that makes the war. You know, it's the industry or it's our elected officials, you know, for whatever reason. I'm not down there, you know, but there are things that we as citizens have to correct. We are the only one. Like the citizen of America stopped the war in Vietnam.
Right.
I mean, through protests and so forth.
Right. And that's why.
Right. We overcame segregation and racism and all that. Well, not racism. You know, through protests.
Right.
You know, people's, young people's too. And they look at South Africa. It was the young people's who got fed up.
Right.
And they started going up against tanks. We see the same thing in other countries like Libya. I mean, they want what we have, but they don't want all the negative stuff.
Right.
You know, and that's what families want. So it's like, it's get it back. I think it's really a small percentage. And just like you said earlier, you know, when you meet people, and that's what they are fed. And we are fed the same thing when we go to foreign country. If someone says something is $3, you should barge them down to $3 or to $2, you know. But when you go in a store, you don't do that. If the price is $3, you pay
$3. Right,
so it's the same thing. Like if there's a trouble area, maybe there's a conflict or something between different tribes there. Well, sure, it's the State Department duty to warn you. I mean, so they warn
there,
you.
It's dangerous.
Yeah,
so
well,
you don't go.
Know, so you'll be alert.
Right. And they say there's shooting going on in this area,
right.
So you don't go there. So
and
if somebody come in America and say, well, you know, this Inglewood community, that's the shooting is going on.
Right.
You don't go there. If you're coming from another country, you don't know enough
you don't
to
know. You
try
know,
to
and
risk
then,
it.
Too, you know, if you, you know, you proceed with caution, you know, because
right.
you know the majority of the people there are not shooting.
Right.
And that's an internal problem. It's just like I couldn't come to your house and say, I want you to move this over there, or I don't like the way you're raising your children. I couldn't do that. You could have me arrested, or you could, you know, you could put me out of your house. So the thing is like the problem that we're having here in the drive-by shooting, that's our neighbors that's
right.
doing it.
Right.
And so in many cases, we are afraid to even say, look, stop doing that. Report them to the authority because
we're
afraid
we
might be the next victim.
Yeah, and
so
that's
you know,
that's the thing we got
to
deal with.
That's what we
got to
deal with.
It's not going to stop until if your neighbor is the problem, then you need to, if you can't go and talk to your neighbor, then you need to get together with your other neighbor and all of you all go talk to your neighbor.
Right.
We have to fix this internal problem because
right.
this does impact global trade. If people are afraid to
true.
Come to you, they're not going to come and do
right.
business with you. So you
they
find businesses disappearing because
right.
of fear.
Just
and,
like in Israel and Palestine.
Right.
You know, I mean, they're supposed to be like cousins, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so they're going to have to, I don't know, I don't have the solution.
Well, I know I wouldn't go in a place where people are blowing themselves up.
No,
whatever the political conflict is, I'm not going there
I'm
if you all are in combat because I'd just be collateral damage, you know.
Really, and that's what it amounts to, you know.
Right.
Well,
so, we've got some callers that want to talk to you all, and let me bring them in. Of course, if you're listening online, give us a call, 347-539-5639, press 1 when you're ready to join in. You're listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif. We've asked a question. What is the global image of African Americans? We've got two photographers on the line that are capturing some images that will define us and preserve our history through the visual imagery of photography. But we need to change that global image of violence that creates fear. How do we do that? Well, let's take some calls. And, of course, if you're listening online, give us a call, 347-539-5639. Press 1 when you're ready to join in, and let us go to, well, let's see, we have got you here. Let me take these quickly. Our caller at 773-619 had another statement. Go right ahead.
Yeah.
773-619, you with us? All right. Check the mute on your phone. Let me go to 314-381. Our brother Pianchi in St. Louis. Go right ahead with your question or comment.
You know, the global image that they see is sports and entertainers. When I go in Egypt and I have word locked hair, they ask, oh, you're an entertainer.
And oh, because you had locked? Is that the artsy
yes.
hairdo block?
When
okay.
some of the younger youth, teenagers go out into the market, and their peers in Egypt, they go out into the souk, S-U-K, it's what they call market, they will be greeted, oh, what's up, my nigga? Because
oh, no.
that's what they see on TV. Yes, they do.
No.
Go down
you know,
into the markets down in Abel Simbel. Let's see, what's that Abel Simbel? Also in Luxor, the young youth will greet them like that. They don't. It's not the derogatory that they're doing based on what they see on the TV. And they will fight you back if you get mad. So you don't have the ability to project your own image that you want. You know, that's the same thing I always get back. If you don't have businesses to control advertisement dollars in order to keep newspapers and other medias that you don't own and control, that's the only way you can control them from putting out a negative image of you. And it does go on. So why would you be, why try to hide it? It goes on. So I would listen to you. Another thing on your conversation about hair, if I could comment. Natural hair today is coming back into another fad. Black women all throughout history has had different hairstyles. You know, going to the tombs and the temples, you can see black women sitting and palming locks. You can see, we find in the museums, whether it's in Cairo or down in Aswan, in the Nubian Museum, you see wigs with jerry curls and statues with twists, with men with twists. And so on and so on and so on. So and you can go into other African societies, you know, whether it's in Senegal, whether it's in, I've been in Jinka down in the southern areas of Ethiopia. And, you know, my wife is from Ghana. There's an area there called Lome, not Lome, but Dome, right outside of Accra and Tessano, where all the black women, not all the black women, but the large quote-unquote village, a tribe of black women whose hair comes down below their shoulders, real thick, and it's brown, which you hardly ever see. I mean, it's just like almost like brunette brown. So women have different, black women have different hairstyles, and there's different periods of time go by, they'll change those hairstyles, and then you got some that just got natural, different-looking hairstyles. This weave thing is something new, Naima, because it's just a new technology.
Well, I know, you know, most of the hair is used as, like, synthetic. So I guess if it's synthetic, what does that mean? It's grown or whatever from plants. I'm not sure how it's produced. So you've got differences between the natural hair and the synthetic hair. But that's an interesting point you make, Isla, with the historic ways we've done our hair. And ways, I mean, we've mixed some things with mud and everything else to make it almost like sculpture and all of that. So, Delisha, how deeply into the history of our hair will your coffee table book get into, and even some of the imitations of ancient styles that may be resurrected now that we're doing? I know Senegalese twists have been around a long time.
Right. That's a word I haven't heard in a long time. Thank you for bringing that up. Senegalese twist. You're absolutely right.
Yes.
They do have, right. And you know another thing, they do put chemicals in their hair, but guess what? I've seen a lady take coconut, take the meat of the coconut out, mix it up, and so on, they was applying it to their hair. It's a relaxer.
Yeah.
But it's natural chemicals. Chemicals doesn't have to be something that's out of a can that's lye or poisonous rat poison. It also natural chemicals. Coconut shells ground up and used as something. Pineapple applied in a way or another is used as a chemical that they do in order to process the hair. But, you know, Senegalese twists, I haven't heard that in a long time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and as a matter of fact, the product that I use is coconut-based. We got a family member that's got a hair care company and, you know, uses coconut-based extracts, you know, for the hair oil that I use on the locks that I have. So we've known what things to use from the earth that make our hair grow. But, Delisha, how deeply into the history are you able to get with the kinds of things that we've chosen to do with our hair and educating people on what the styles actually originate from and what they mean?
So, Ms. Naima, I think that's a great question. This young brother brought up the historical aspects. The foreword in my coffee table book will address some of the history. Of course, it won't be a complete history. I think that's a great idea for another coffee table book. Thanks for bringing that up. Yes, we have historically borrowed from our past. where does the braiding come from? You know, how long have we been braiding? Because it's definitely not meant for Caucasian hair. If you try to braid straight hair, it's very difficult for it to stay. And one of the things about our hair is that it is amenable to these different styles. And as you said, we've been doing this a long time. It's nothing new. It isn't new. What we've done is we've evolved over time and added. And that's where I think the hair extensions actually is not unique to our generation. It's been done in Africa. In fact, they even used to use thread. You know, even threading and how they separate the hair and how they tie it off, that is called threading. And there's a group, I can't remember, it's escaping me right now, that thread the entire shaft of the hair. And they wear these sort of braid-looking styles, but they're not braids. And so, yes, we have a rich, rich history of how we've been, changing our hair and what it means. And I would like to address that. I don't think that the Natural Type Project, again, the Natural Type Project is focused on our individual hair journeys, but I think that's a great project for future consideration, which is our overall hair journey. Where have we come from and where we are today, and how does it mirror history? Because really, you know, we wore bell bottoms again, right? We mirror history quite frequently. And so that is something that definitely is of interest, and it definitely is piquing my interest, and I definitely will think about that as I go on the project. And the other thing, he also mentioned that his hair is in locks. So I would like to say that the Natural Type Project is not simply for women. The hair journey for men is important as well. And I've been finding it difficult to get men to come pose for me. So if you want to take that trip from St. Louis, if we need to take a trip to St. Louis, definitely come on out and be a part of the project, the Natural Type Project.
And you know something else too, the way they design their hair, you can look at their hair and it tells a story. Just like when you walk into a village, it tells a story. Mm-hmm. In the museum, I've seen pics, you know, like we used to have Afro pics. You see Afro pics. I was in a Nubian village, and you can't tell those girls from girls the south side of Chicago when you look at them. But they have their hair. We have beads. You know those beads with the holes in them you put on your hair, and all different colors and little balls. And they do that over there also. And you can see that stuff in the museum that goes back 10,000 years with berets and all those little neat little things that you put in your hair. So, no, it's not the – this is something that black women have been doing for eons. They will do it for the eons in the future. They just change their hair. And what you see going on with today with weaves is just a different fad that's coming along. I've never seen that before. But the lady mentioned about the thread, and yes, I've seen some of that they have little bones with holes in them like a needle, and they run the threads through your hair and make it look all a little neat and so forth. So,
I would like to emphasize, right now it seems to be a fashion, but even that fashion has some, their own personal history behind it. You know, why did I decide to cut my hair? Why did I decide to, do weave? Maybe it was because I was struggling with my own image. Maybe it was because, and that's what the Natural Type Project focuses on, is that it's not simply a fad. It's that it is more than a fad and more than a journey. That this journey that we call our hair is definitely a big part of us, and it has a story behind it. And, men don't always... I feel like maybe the natural men may see it, but the men who cut their hair and kind of their journey is to go to the barbershop every week, they don't have the same connection that women who, have to attach their beauty to their hair. They attach their sexiness, their thankfulness and who they are, and it tells, like you said, it tells a story. Maybe the pigment in their hair that was pink, and maybe the red clay pigment that they added to their hair, it also said, I'm ready for a wedding. It said, I'm ready for marriage. It said, I'm ready for a partner. Those things were messages that
now,
they...
Now, that's interesting. Because we didn't really realize it. And a lot of things that we may do now that we imitate, we don't know that there is a meaning or a cultural message behind it. And so that certainly is a means of educating and understanding.
Yeah.
Well, we've got a couple more callers, and then Kurt,
am I still on?
Yeah, you're still on.
Oh, okay, because I could add a bit about the hair.
Yeah, let me take a call, and then
okay,
I'm going
right.
to get
okay.
your view on that, because you've kind of seen how
I've seen
a lot of things have evolved that we're now imitating without knowledge. But we've got a caller at 312-391, I believe it's my dear friend Joyce. Good morning.
Yes,
thank
indeed.
You for joining
how
us on the Female Solution. Excellent, grateful, good to hear your voice.
Good. I've been trying to, because I happened to get up early this morning because I have a doctor's appointment. I'm like, let me see if I can get through with her. But what I was saying, I'm listening to what you're talking about, and the thing is, with the African-American society, we are a society of mimicking people. We don't have our own nothing. It's almost like we see somebody, like, you know, the people, the guys walking around with the pants down and showing their underwears and stuff. They saw that in prison. So they came out and they saw it, and then the people are like, oh, that looked cool. So they start doing it. Now it's almost an epidemic. So we do things by watching others. That's our problem. We're not individuals. We don't invent nothing. We see something that may look good on somebody and, oh, let me try that. Let me try this. And we need to get something that we can stand by, you know?
And say this is ours.
Well, black people, you know, black Americans, black Americans have been innovative and creative, and they do have
been
a way.
No, they're not creative. They're not creative. They just do at whim.
Well,
know,
let me explain
let me
to you.
Let me ask this question. Let me ask this question.
If you're in jail and you don't have a belt, so you wear your pants down. But what these guys don't know is wearing their pants down in jail resembles you inviting me to your backside. Those were gay guys.
Well, let me ask this question because, you know, you've brought up something that I've observed, and I see a lot of different music videos from other countries, again, Asia,
right.
You know, and so forth.
Right.
Sagging, you know, which is what it's called when you're wearing your pants below your butt.
Right.
Somehow people have seen us do it and think it's cool, and then they imitate it, and
exactly.
they may not know the origins of it. So,
exactly.
Well, Curtis, let me ask you this. Have you seen any of that in the African countries that you visited? Is that one of those things in African-American culture that they're imitating? I tend to think other people don't do that.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
That was something that the jailbirds invented.
And we've got a prison culture here in America.
We in America need to publicize what that sagging of the pants mean. It meant I'm inviting you to my behind. I believe if they advertised what that meant, a whole bunch of men would start putting a belt on and keeping their pants up.
If something like that is derogatory as it is, that they would stop. But we've been saying it, and they say, well, you know, maybe that's what it means, but nah, it's cool. Just like what Curtis, you're saying,
people don't know what it means. They don't care.
What I've learned, they would care if they would advertise,
let you know what it meant. They would stop it. But how many people do you have that? When I heard about it, I was shocked. I'm like, what?
What I was told by a young man is that it's now cool to have done time in jail. So even though they have heard it's a prison look, it's like, yeah, I did time. I'm cool. I'm a man. That's what a lot of young men
are. That's one of the many cultures in the United States.
They have been indoctrinated. That's why it's cool, because they have been indoctrinated. I know my friend went to jail, and he was over there overnight, and they raped him. Now he walks around with the saggy pants.
But you know, Naima, you have to come to the reality that there exists within United States black society certain levels of culture. There are subcultures, that's mimicking, that's subcultures that you have in Chicago that's different than the subcultures with most black population down in Mississippi? And, you know, one other thing I wanted to mention about the hair, the school-age girls all wear their hair short, like a short short natural. In many of the West African countries I've been in, Ghana, like the gentleman, I'm sure he can attest.
I know I saw that where Oprah set up her school. I was
South Africa, they do it also.
That was kind of like the almost a uniform hairdo, just the short afro.
In most of your sub-Saharan black countries, they wear the girls when they're in school age, they wear their hair short. They don't, you know, you don't see the things that we see in our children's hair here.
Well, I did notice that, and you know, it seemed like they felt like it was a cute hairstyle, so it was very popular. But Curtis, let me ask you, what did you observe with? Well, first of all, one of the points that Joyce brought up with the sagging pants, I'm noticing the world is starting to imitate that, just like they imitate our music and everything else. They imitate the look that goes with that, not knowing the origins of it or the negativity of it. Did you see a lot of imitation of that in Africa?
Yeah, I saw it. In the cities with the young people, you know, say under 20 and so forth. In fact, under 20. You know, like in the old days, I remember when we were wearing, when Zoot Suit was the custom. And the older generation, they would say, oh, that's the, you know, they was against it. They were saying it was a negative. They got negative reaction from young men wearing Zoot Suit. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
you know,
I remember those.
You remember seeing pictures of
that.
They weren't saggy. Yeah, they were kind of saggy, but they were real close near the bottom.
Right,
you know.
Right.
And then it changes. You know, we adopt different styles, you know. And as for creativeness, I think we're the most creative people there is in the world. We invented things like the stoplight, refrigerators, you know, and, you know, this goes on George Washington Carver, and, you know, I mean, we have so many inventors in our race, you know, and we got jazz, blues, you know, so we're not imitating anyone. Other people imitate us. They're taking, you know, they capitalize off of it, just like now with the hairstyle. As for the young lady, I think her name is Delisha, you know, I would suggest also she check out, if she haven't done it already, check out the Kindle books, you know. That's free. You know, you get your manuscript with your photo, and, you know, just it have to be camera ready. You can upload that to Amazon. I have 3 books on it. I have My Sankofa, which is my story, you know, my life in Africa that covers the 10 years. I have a picture book of one on African mentality. That's on Amazon. It's called Aboatia, you know, that's spelled Aboatia. And then you can just go to my Facebook, Curtis Kojo Morrow. And sure, I got all, you know, you can refer people to your, you know, to your other websites, you know, by way of that. So I think we one of the most outstanding race of peoples in the world. Hey, look, there's no other race of people in this world that could match, even come close to matching our history. I mean, you know, like how many people we know that come from slavery all the way up to the White House? You know, I mean, give me a break. I mean, what is it? So, you know, I understand why the white folks, the slave masters, didn't allow us to teach. It was against the law to teach a black slave to read, because they probably knew. Look, and anyway, so they lost on that fight, you know. So it's a lot of things that when you think about the positive thing that we have contributed to this country, which is our country, really, you know, and you could write novels, and people are writing books, but they're not being read as much as they should be. But and as for the prison culture thing, like, I mean, who want to go to jail and smell doo-doo, you know what I mean, and pee all the time, you know, people throwing stuff at, you know, I mean, what sane person want to go and spend time in prison? Because they think it's a good thing. if they do, they're just really feeding their prison industries. That's jobs, you know.
Well,
we out here, we fighting for the jobs too, you know. We fighting for those jobs, I don't see, I hate to hear people put themselves down. You know, I'm not going to put myself down, you know, and you're not going to put yourself down, you know. I'll put the whole race down, you know.
I've seen with my own eyes.
From the viewpoint of 81.
I agree with you, Curtis.
You've been around a while.
Yeah, now let me say one more thing about this hair thing. You know, with the hair thing now, for instance, different tribes, you know, have different hairstyles. I'm very familiar with Ghana and West Africa, period.
So now does the South have certain meanings, or like, unmarried women wear this, married women wear that,
yes,
you know, if you're going to war,
that.
You wear this. Do they have, meanings for those styles?
I think, you know, you're familiar with, I know you're familiar with the Adinkra symbols. Many of those symbols is also incorporated in the breed. And then for the other thing, like saying lock, many tribes is identified by their locks, by their hairstyle. You know, like their Ashanti, they wear their hair, you know, close-shaven, just like we, the average Afro-American do, you know.
And the kente cloth.
And also now, and the people from the north, we have the fuller knees, they have locks, dreadlocks, you know, that's what the white folks call it. And so when you see a brother or sister in Africa, the first thing you want to do is identify them. Usually you can identify them by their dress, by their appearance, by their hair style. So if I'm an Ashanti in an Ashanti area and I see a brother with locks, I'm going to associate him with a nomad, you know, with a fuller knee or someone, you know, in the north, and usually a fuller knee, you see.
Uh-huh.
So that's one way, that's another way of identifying your, you know, thing. Now, with us, we go there, you know, we have adopted many different African style. You know,
right.
It depends on what suit our purpose, whether it's locks or whether it's the braiding. You know, I know some people that was forerunners in Heidi Kell Burke. I think you know her name.
Yes.
She was one of the outstanding braiders here in Chicago. You know, so, and that's what she done for a living. She taught braiding. And then in my village, the village that I was adopted in, the Ashantis up in the Kumasi area there. Mm-hmm. I mean, the women there, they braid, they have some beautiful hair style, but then you notice that the older ones, some of the 9 ounce, you know, they might wear their hair natural, you know, just cut short, like natural, you know.
Yeah.
That's come with the royal family and so forth. But, you know, they can do what they want. I mean, there's no restriction. In the city,
and
now,
they also tell their story
the city,
in the kente cloth that they wear.
If a woman in the city would use dye in her hair as she go back to her village, then she's going to have to deal with the women there, the seniors. You know, like, why you, you know, it's just like going to a market.
So it's not looked favorably upon for a woman, an elderly woman, to dye her hair to get rid of the gray the way it is here, because gray is a symbol of what, wisdom? So therefore, gray is good. Culturally and in places you've been in, because elders are respected, and I think that's kind of a key thing. When you're respected as an elder, then you want to appear to be an elder. So therefore, you don't want to get rid of your gray and dye it back black, because then you're making yourself younger than you are, and reducing your own level of respect.
Right. You know, my advice would be for all of us who are culture and you know, enlightened, just like your guest, the one you're talking now, you know, we should go there. I understand the brother has gone there before. Go there, even if you just go on a vacation. And if possible, spend a little time there. You know, you break away from the group, you know, and spend a little time there. As for the young man, he's married to a guy there. I would suggest he, you know, learn her language if he haven't already, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you see how many days. I think I'm getting a sign, Simba saying 60 seconds.
but yeah, we got about a minute left on the show. But of course, I'm really grateful that all of you have joined in today and added some cultural insight. Because we do, as a people, we're influencing the world more than we know. But we have to choose to project a positive image. And Joyce, I do agree that we've got young men out here that are imitating something. They don't know the negative impact of it. I'll be so glad when this sagging pants fad fades away, because I'm sick of it. I'm sick of looking at behinds and drawers. But it's up to mothers to teach their children, teach their sons self-respect. And we got to teach our daughters as well, because we let them go out with their behinds hanging out. So this is a reflection of that as well. It's our responsibility to make sure
that's
everybody leaving our house represents our family.
That's an indictment on the greater black culture, greater black society, because you didn't have anything better for your children to do.
That's what we've got to change. And we can control our own images by actually putting positive images out there. And my father is actually from Ghana. He lives in Kumasi right now. We actually influence. We're a big influence. We're getting away. Even the ancestors are getting away from wearing their hair in a natural state. Even my dad just sent me a whole bunch of pictures of my aunts and uncles. Not one of them, maybe only one out of the maybe 30 pictures that I have natural hair. They're permed.
Wow.
Yes. And this is from maybe over the last 20 years of pictures. And now you see some of the babies have the natural froze, but I don't know how long that will stay around. But there is some change that's going on, and we can see the change. And I see it in the pictures that my dad sends me of his sisters. That all of them are permed, all of them.
And we definitely have
our own images.
We've got to learn to love our natural selves.
Check me out on Facebook, Curtis Kojo-Morrow.
And Curtis, tell us the name of your books again.
My Sankofa, that's spelled M-Y, my, and S-A-N-K-O-F-A. And it's my story. It covers 11 years, it's just so much. Like the sister, her father is a Ghanaian, That's like, I don't know if you ever had the chance or not, but if you go there, and if you can, learn the language, it would just, a whole new world open up to you. It's just fantastic, really.
Being a daughter changed my view on the world. But before you leave, you guys, I just want you to please come support the Natural Project. Visit the gallery Apa de Arte at 2152 East 71st Street. The artist Leslie Bernardo Dixon is a great storyteller of positive images of African Americans. I hope that people will show up on the first every Saturday, beginning August 1st, 5:45 a.m. and 5:45 p.m. You don't have to call ahead of time. You can go to our website, which is galleryoda.com, to find out more information. That'll be up on August 1st, right before August 1st, that information. So galleryoda.com, or you can find us on Facebook. So be invited.
And 2152, what cross street is that near? Is that near Jeffrey, or trying to figure out how far east that is?
It's Paxton, which is further down east of Jeffrey. So between Paxton and I think the other street is Merrill, I believe. But it's right across from Family Dollar, right next to the sanctuary.
Okay. If you're in and around the Chicagoland area, you want to be part of the project, and that is at 2152 East 71st Street. Go to www.galleryoda.com. And be a part of a beautiful coffee table book expressing our natural beauty. And, I certainly want to thank you for joining us today on The Female Solution. And look forward to some more great photography work from you, as well as from Brother Kojo Morrow, longtime member of the Chicago Association of African American Photographers, whose mission is to capture the history of our people and present those images for the future. So we need to know who we are, and we need to know the impact that we're having around the world. And so we can consciously create the images that people see and imitate. Well, I certainly do appreciate all of you, and I believe we've got just about 15 seconds from our brother, Minister Plump, here. Make it quick before we go.
We on Ya Shalom, Assalamu Alaikum. Black is beautiful now and forever, and put some black power wherever you go, and praise the Lord. We're going to be out there tomorrow at 5630 South Halsted, and I'd like to encourage all Chicago to come out for prayer, and we're going to, we already got the victory.
All right,
the
23rd, yes, sir.
Psalm and 43rd chapter of Isaiah. We're going to read that to them to know that our opposition will not be able to stand. They will be losers. Thank you so much. God bless your heart. We love
all
you.
Right. Chicago. And we love you too, my brother. Well, I certainly do thank you for that. And certainly that is an opportunity that we are employing to stop the violence before it starts. Go to those areas where people are in conflict and give them good vibrations of prayer and loving words so that we can prevent negative actions. And we can do this everywhere we are in the world. And that is our goal and our mission. And we certainly do thank you, my brother, for reiterating that. Join us again tomorrow morning, as always, 7 a.m., as we spend another 2 hours saving the world.
We've come to the end of our show today, but you can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows, order our books, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Thank you to all of you who listened in and joined in on today's discussion on The Female Solution. And to my family listening all around the world, I say thank you. Cheche. Zanyavad. Arigato gozaimasu. Kamsahamnida. Spasiba. Danke. Merci. Gracias. Shukran. Medasi. Eshe. Jairuje. Ngiebonga. Asante. Toda. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you, and may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessings.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing. Share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is The Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone. Call in with your comments, 347-539-5639, and be a part of the solution.